What's up, guys? Welcome to Narrative Calculus, the podcast show where we review everything from movies to hopefully books soon and musicals, apparently now. Isn't that right, Ty? And everything in between. He left me out on that one. And today our very special episode is our Lord of the Rings retrospective.
But it's not a retrospective because we did no research on how this affected the fantasy.
It's details.
Retrospective.
So we're going to be going over the three Lord of the Rings movies. In case you don't know, the first one's called Fellowship of the Rings. Next is Fellowship of the Ring, not the Rings. The Two Towers, and then Return of the King. Let's just, in case anyone hasn't seen them, which is not likely, but we'll go over them anyway. So, the first movie, The Fellowship of the Ring.
I can do this one.
We start off in... Sure, do it.
So, basically, Frodo, he's a hobbit dude, you know, he lives his happy life. Then Gandalf comes out of nowhere, and things happen. Turns out that Frodo's great uncle had, like, a ring thing, and it's actually very dangerous, and it could bring about the end of the world if he doesn't throw it into the lava of Mount Doom where it was forged. So, basically, whole bunch of stuff happens. He leaves his village. He heads to this place called Bree, meets this ranger guy called Aragorn. No relation to Aragon, although Aragon would probably wish he was related to somebody half as cool as Aragorn. Subtle burn. and they basically run around like headless chickens for a while until they reach Rivendell, where Frodo decides to take up the ring because, as a hobbit, he has a much stronger resistance to the ring because he has much less power. So there's this guy called Boromir, and he, like, betrays them at the end, but he redeems himself and gets killed, and then Frodo runs away with Sam. The end.
Two Towers basically picks off where the other one left off. Starts off with a dream sequence of what Gandalf went through when he supposedly, in quotes, died, which he actually didn't in the last one.
Yeah, I forgot
and
to mention
see
that
Gollum
part.
Is now interacting. Gollum is now interacting with Frodo and Sam. Sam being very not trusting, but Frodo willing to give him a chance. The two, after the two hobbits, Merry and Pippin, were captured, the orcs took them, and they're trying to get them back to Sauron because he believes one of the halflings has the ring. And then they basically, the whole bunch of stuff happens, and the two hobbits meet trees, and then the Aragorn, the elf guy, whatever his name is, I forgot, and Gimli, they go after them thinking that they're dead, and then they do stuff with the Rohan kingdom, and then after that Gandalf the White comes there and basically frees the king of Saruman's control over him, and some more battles happen, and they go to Helm's Deep, and then one of the greatest battles in fantasy or maybe ever happens. The end. Nice. Third movie. What was it called?
Return of the King.
Don't you mean Return of the Jedi?
Ah, nuts. I think you mean Revenge of the Sith?
I meant Attack of the Clones.
Harry Potter and the... What was it again? Harry Potter and the Deadly Hallows?
Okay. So with this, the last installment basically also picks up where it left off with Sam and... Sam and Frodo going off to destroy the ring once and for all, and then there's basically another big battle, and they win. That's the highlight. Did I miss anything, Ty? I don't think I did I?
I guess Frodo sailing off into the distance?
Yeah, okay. Then that happened. So, let's start off with the first movie. Just give our quick thoughts, kind of overview.
This is mostly just going to be...
In case you guys didn't know,
yeah.
Also...
This is just going to be a quick summary.
Just our quick thoughts of our individual thoughts of what we thought of each of the movies. If you want to hear more in depth, we have individual episodes on each movie. But Ty, why don't you start with Fellowship of the Ring?
Fellowship of the Ring. Okay, it's a prologue. It just sets things up. Not really much to say about it. Does things competently. None of the characters really get fleshed out very much, except for Boromir, who actually has a pretty decent character arc, at least compared to the other, you know, cred shows that are everybody else in this show.
Is that it? Nice. Okay. My thoughts. Basically the same. A lot of setup. I've actually warmed up to Boromir. If you listen to our first episode of our Lord of the Rings series, you know I wasn't a huge fan, but seeing him again, I kind of warmed up to him. I like the... It's kind of nice having seen it again to just kind of see the peace and tranquility of the Shire. It's pretty low stakes at the moment, though, compared to all the rest of it. Them just trying to get the ring to Rivendell. And then just some shenanigans with orcs happen. The Mine of Moria is kind of cool a little bit. Yeah, not a whole lot. It's basically just a big setup movie.
I should probably mention... what do you think of the
Two Towers?
Wait, I should probably mention that I couldn't find my original copy for The Fellowship of the Ring, so I ended up having to get, like, a cheap Chinese bootleg version for the rewatch. Yeah. Okay, Two Towers, right. Two Towers.
Arguably the Empire Strikes Back of the series, as Ty would say.
Yes, it's probably not up to Empire Strikes Back quality levels, but in terms of how others see it, and how it's approached even within the series itself, like how it's presented.
Its role in the story.
Exactly.
Its role in the story, basically. Okay.
It's probably the most fun one of them all. It's got the most intense battles, I think. It's got the most... Mm-hmm. It's got fairly good characterization, all things considered. The plot drives forward really hard. Yeah. Altogether, it's a pretty solid movie, if only the characters weren't utter crud as usual.
I know. Yeah. Basically, same for me. Characters weren't super hot. The Helm's Deep battle is... I guess you'd have to see the Braveheart battles again, because I think those are pretty good. I've only seen that movie, like, one time a long time ago, though. I'd say this is, like, one of the best battles, like, ever. They do such a good job instilling you with a sense of dread. It's just so good. I love it. Especially seeing all the old men and women and children there. It's pretty great. The Hobbits are okay. I like Aragorn more in this movie than in the last one. I think his, Elvish girlfriend made the right decision, but then she messed it up in Return of the King. But whatever. Gandalf coming back as Gandalf the White is kind of racist, but
I'm just kidding, but don't agree that. He went there!
Okay, just cut that out.
No, that's staying, buddy. That is staying. You have turned to the dark side, and I am recording it for the rest of the world to see.
I don't want to get canceled, dude. I don't want to get canceled.
No, okay. Dude, it's not racist if you're pointing out that an act is racist. That's not... I think you're kind of missing the point.
I think everything's racist. Okay, so, I guess that's all I have to say about it. Overall, I think it's the best in the series. I think the third doesn't quite live up to it in any way. I think the characters are maybe... I don't know. I guess the characters of Sam and Frodo are a little bit like the best they have been, I think. But I think it's because they're on dire straits now. The battle isn't nearly as good as it was in Helm's Deep. Yeah. Okay, that's how I feel about it. How do we feel about the Return of the King, or Jedi, or Attack of the Clones, or
Revenge? You just mentioned how you feel about Return of the King. It wasn't good. It didn't measure up to the Two Towers.
That's how you feel?
That's what you just... Return of the King.
So now you can tell me.
Return of the King. So, I think it's the most entertaining out of all of them, and the most satisfactory, but it's kind of riding off of the success of the others. It didn't really earn the climaxes in the same way that the Two Towers did. Sure, the Two Towers had terrible characterization, but it didn't really try to pretend to build off of that characterization, right? It was just really awesome battles and really awesome plot. Here, they're trying to give us character climaxes, but it's totally unearned, which gives it a seriously bitter taste in my mouth when I watch it, right? So,
yeah,
that's my thoughts on Return of the King summed up.
The characters, I think we can both agree, were flat in most of the movies. There's a couple glimmers of hope here and there. Like, I mean, Gandalf has some personality, and Boromir isn't that bad, and I guess that's it, just two. But oh no, Sam. There's Sam and Frodo, which their relationship is, it's not a character, but it is something. I'll have to give it that. It's definitely one of the more special things in the series, to me at least. I really like the loyalty Sam has to his friend. I think it's very admirable. And I think it's interesting to see Frodo's descent, almost like Gollum's, but he's able to repel it just by a tad. And yeah, characters weren't all that good, but a few glimmers. Your thoughts?
Yeah, they were bad. They were really bad. I feel like Tolkien was like just so intoxicated with the world and the plot that he basically forgot about everything else. It feels like the characters, I think fundamentally how he viewed the characters in his fiction, were as tools. They were plot drivers. They were, it wasn't so much about the character. What he did was he grabbed the character and he stuffed them into the role that had been assigned to them for the story. Like, we need somebody to carry the ring. Okay, let's see here. Got it. Okay, it has to be a hobbit. I know that I want it to be a hobbit. What's his other characteristics? Doesn't matter. He's a hobbit. Bam. Character made. Okay, let's see here. Second character. All right, we're going to need a king for Gondor. Well, okay, let's see here. He's going to be like a ranger, right? He's going to be someone who was raised by the elves. Okay, bam. Character. All right, here we go. Let's see. Number three. Okay.
And the list goes on.
I feel like that's honestly how Tolkien. They are not people. Yeah. They were designed explicitly for one purpose. They are machines, robots that for their assigned tasks. You know.
Yeah.
So.
Yep, I agree.
From a more fundamental view, I think that's why. Mm-hmm. Why the characters in this feel so flat. They were prioritizing plot to such an extent that the characters basically flew by on the wayside.
But then again, you are very you're very educated in this subject. What do you say, just as a question, is more important, character or plot? And which would you choose if you could only have one?
That's actually a really good question, which I'm not,
Well, you're going to have to answer
No. What I'm saying is I am not educated as you would think. Oh. I'm not really... All I've done is a ton of reading on it. I really don't think I'm qualified for this. But I think people separate them, but I think they're far more intermingled than most people... Most writers, actually, tend to approach it. You know, they say they want their character... Dramatica. In Dramatica, actually, Melanie Phillips, I think that's her name, pointed this out. So often, it seems like writers, they have a plot about saving the world or something external like that, and then they realize, shoot, I forgot about the characters. And so they, try to force the characters around, and exactly what Tolkien is doing here. Or, with characters, okay, here's what they're doing, here's what they're... Shoot, I forgot about the plot. What do they want? What are they gonna do? What's the external conflict here? And it's like they're far more intermingled than that. Like, they're really...
Yeah.
A character who desperately wants something, I think that's the key. A character who really, really wants something is already going to create a huge plot. You just basically chuck obstacles in their way, and that's a good story already, right off the bat. But it's gotten to the point where it seems like more and more they're seen as separate things when they're just really, really not. And that's... But I guess if I had to really choose, it would be characters. Simply because I think the best fiction is character-driven. And I'm so sorry for that rant. I don't know where that came from.
So, no, that's fine, that's fine. So, I'm just thinking. So, you would rather watch indie movie character study, where not a whole ton is happening with the plot, like it's not like super exciting, but it has amazing characters and their development is just incredible.
Well, here's the thing.
Something like Lord of the Rings, where there's a whole lot going on with the plot, but there's not much character.
Here's the thing. Both of them are going to be far... They're not going to be nearly as good as they would be if they were able to interconnect both the plot and character in a meaningful way. But yes, I would have to go for the character, because I find people more interesting than situations. That's just more interesting to me.
I know you do. Okay, cool. Okay, so now we've finished that up. Well, about the plot, the good parts, the meats of this. Except there's barely any armor.
No, the plot is the best part of this, and it really speaks to Tolkien's...
Yeah, I know,
It really speaks to Tolkien's skill as a writer, that in spite of what I just said, I would have to cite Lord of the Rings as an exception to the rule, because it really is an exceptional work. Even though I strongly dislike the characterization, he still managed to make it work, you know?
Yeah. So, wait, actually, I want to go back to the other point. There's one more thing I wanted to ask you. Do you think that as time has went on, there's been a continual, like, shift from character and plot? Like, either a movie, like, there's not many movies anymore that has plot, that have plot and character, and there's, like, there's barely any that have that. It's either plot or character. Do you think we've kind of disconnected those two in modern Hollywood? I'm asking, like, how many, do you think that a lot more movies have either plot or character, or... than plot and character?
Actually, so I said yes earlier because I thought you were about to ask a different question, but I think if you really look through it, like, the reason why we see so much disconnect in most fiction, and I'm talking about average fiction, not Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings is a whole different boatload, you know? Like, it's just we have... We're in an era where it's so much easier to share information than ever before, right? There are more books coming out than there were ever before. So we look at the classics and we say, oh man, those periods were so much better. I mean, look at all these books that were made, right? Like, all the books in that period were great. Well, no. It's just, we don't see the crud. Like, the 90% that's really bad, they never became popular enough for us to even remember them. The 10% that stuck around, the only ones that we see. So that's why we have this bias and say, oh, the great classics of the past, you know, why was it that the writers in that period were so much better? You know, like, why is it that the 1500s had Shakespeare, and we have, you know, John Gary Stu over here with his power fantasy protagonist able to, you know, destroy the world in one blast, right?
Yeah.
Sorry for the rant again.
Yeah, I definitely see what you mean. That's a really good answer. No, that was a really good answer. I enjoyed that. So, about the plots. Definitely the best part of it. Definitely extremely intricate. The world building in all these movies is just phenomenal. And I'm not going to credit that only to the writers, but also to the filmmakers, who really, really do a good job of bringing this whole thing to life. Like, I asked you, I don't think you've ever seen the behind the scenes, have you?
No, I've been trying to get around to it, but I think I saw a couple clips.
Well, to...
but not...
to you and to anyone else who hasn't seen them before, definitely take a look. It's so interesting how they get everything done with the effects that they do. I mean, I know this is kind of not super relevant on the plot, but I think that the way that we interpret the plot, which is basically the filmmaker's job, is also extremely important. I think that was very well executed here. So, okay, so about the plot itself, then, should we describe it? No, we already did that, didn't we? So, what else do we say about it?
I think we should start getting down. We often say, like, the plot is epic and it's intricate and awesome, but I think we should really start to get into what we mean by that. Like, why do we think the plot is so just awesome?
Well, I would say it's because of its grand scale. The grand scale and the stakes.
I think I agree with that. And part of that is due to the world building. Like, it's one thing when you have this dead, lifeless world that's being threatened with, you know, the end of the world and, you know, all that stuff. It's like, whatever, right? And so that's why people like the writers that I've read on, they advise more personal stakes, like, you know, a close loved one getting hurt or something like that, right?
Yeah.
You know, because then it's much more connected to the reader. Right? Yeah. So, again, it speaks to Tolkien's skill as a writer that in spite of that, he still had us on the edge of our seat, wondering what was going to happen, if they were going to be able to throw the One Ring into the...
Yeah. You know, this also reminds me of one point that you made during our Prince of Egypt review, which, if you haven't seen that, go check it out. I like it. So, you said something about that we don't care, we're not supposed to care, or we don't care about the Hebrews because they're just like a mindless sum of people that don't have any characterization or anything like that. They're just kind of like being overworked. And I definitely see what you meant there. But I mean, like, besides there being like more scenes of just like normal people, what do you think is the difference? Because I can't tell what the difference is between those two and what makes this one good and the other one bad. Not saying Prince of Egypt was a bad movie, but just that we don't care about the Israelites.
Right. And yeah, I totally get what you're saying. I think the key difference is probably... Wow, that's actually a really rough question. That's a good one. Okay. I think it has to do with Merry and Pippin. And the fact that it's such a living, breathing world. I know, that sounds totally disconnected. I'm like, what am I even saying inside of my head right now? But I'm about to...
I know it's hard, I can't think of anything.
I think what made the difference, especially early on in the Shire, so you have these normal people milling around, and it's superficially concerning, right? But I think what immediately... Mm-hmm. Makes it so much more what makes you more concerned about the people in the Shire is that you have people who are closely concerned about the Shire and who have that doesn't make sense. I think we're approaching this from the wrong angle. I don't think there was much care about the world itself. Maybe, although the world was totally fascinating.
Well, then I don't understand that. Then why are the stakes so high, and why do we care so much about the stakes, and we didn't about the Israelites, Hebrews, or whatever?
Well, what?
Like, wait, what makes us care about this? The only thing that they can really like the only thing. So we went over that the characters are bad. We already know that, and so we don't really care that much if anything happens to them. Would you consider that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And so they're really the only things that we have, like, to care about at all. So if we have this another big sum of people who don't have any characterization, and the main characters barely have any characterization, they're garbage, why do we care at all? You don't have to can't think of anything, because I legitimately can't either. I'm just blank.
It's interesting, and it's really strange that they managed to get us to care about... Maybe it's not emotional care as in care, the kind of care you would give to a loved one. It's the kind of care you would give to a car wreck in slow motion. Like, you can't look away because it's so intriguing and so interesting, and you're wondering, you know, how badly could this turn out? It's not the kind of care where you're worried about what could happen. It's the kind of care where you're excited for what could happen. You're more interested in the next big fight scene or the next... You're more in love with the idea. What Tolkien managed to capture is he managed to perfectly distill the essence of the saving the world plot. And I think he managed to refine it to such a point that that's the part that we care about. It's on such an epic scale that what attracts you isn't the characters, it's just the awesome battles and the size of the world and the One Ring to rule them all.
Would you credit that though to the Tolkien or the filmmakers? Because that sounds like something that the filmmakers managed to do, not Tolkien. Who would you say? I'd say it's the filmmakers mostly, because if there was just like, if the world was really bad and it was just random people, we wouldn't like care in the slightest. I think that's mostly to be credited to the filmmakers. What do you think? Gives us that great world building.
No, I have to say it was Tolkien. Don't get me wrong. The filmmakers absolutely enhanced it. I mean, like, it is a joy to watch. It's a real spectacle.
Mm-hmm.
But, is, yeah. I mean, people were praising Tolkien's world building long before the filmmakers ever got around to making it. The way he managed to craft such a real, living, breathing world, one that with moving pieces and nations and kings that all wanted their own, that all had their own desires and needs and issues and a massive overarch, like, that was all Tolkien.
I see. Okay. So, what kind of themes did you pick up on? I'll just say real quick what I picked up on. Definitely the, actually, this the one, well, in the last movie, in The Last Jedi, this one quote by Rose Tika. I feel so dumb saying this, but I'm gonna say it anyway. It's the, we're not gonna win by fighting what we...
No! Stop! Stop it! Stop what you're saying right now! No! No! No!
I know.
No! But, stop it!
But... Okay, listen.
Any other quote by any other character in any other movie, please.
Do you think that quote, or I might just not be remembering the movie correctly, but do you think that quote properly summarizes the themes of the last movie?
No, they fight off an army of goblins and slaughter them, and then they kill Sauron. Dude, this is not a make love, not war movie. Like, don't get me wrong. Love.
No, I'm not saying that.
Love was like a huge motivator. I'm not saying that. Love was a huge motivator. I know, but like,
what made me say that is that it seems that every time there was the interactions between Frodo and Sam, that was kind of the vibe I was picking up on, you know? It was like Frodo, Sam was a constant reminder of, like, why we're doing this. I don't know, because of all of their interactions, that's kind of what it reminded me of, that one quote. Because that just kind of feels like why they're doing what they're doing.
Let's put this...
Maybe not necessarily for the rest of the movie, but for... Do you feel that would be a good theme explanation of Frodo and Sam? Because every time I saw Frodo and Sam's interactions, that's kind of what I picked up on.
Yeah, they have a very close relationship, and self-sacrifice and love is definitely a huge thing there, but I mean, like, that quote, like, in context, like, what she was saying about that, Finn was about to sacrifice himself in order to blow up a bunch of dudes and save the rebellion. She storms in and stops him, thus dooming them all. And it's like, it's...
I'm not talking about its context in The Last Jedi. I'm just talking about that overall quote in any sense. That's what...
No, it doesn't... I don't think, like, it applies.
Frodo... Okay.
Because it's necessarily anti-violence and anti-war, which Lord of the Rings was not about. They went to war, they slaughtered people, it's...
I know, I just found a very heavy thematical elements of saving what we love in all of their interactions.
Yeah. So.
That's all. It just seems like there was a lot of stuff like that.
I think...
Okay, just a second.
Should I talk about...
Yeah.
Okay.
Just a second. I had this little list right here of the stuff.
So, I think the biggest theme in this, well, at least one of the biggest, was the idea of power. And, I mean, it makes sense.
Yes.
It makes sense if you consider what time Tolkien lived in. You know what period he lived in, right?
Yeah, like the 1930s or 40s, right?
He lived through
both... Or 20s or 10s?
He lived through both world wars and saw the rise of communism and all of those dictators and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
He had He was right there on the scene watching what power and... collectivism and all those ideologies.
Ooh, I got it. Nuclear weapons are supposed to represent the ring, and the different characters are supposed to represent different countries in real life. And Frodo's supposed to be like, China and
Frodo's Aragorn's tossing his
Russia.
And, wait, what?
And,
I am so confused. No, stop.
And all this nuclear, and there's the
So who's North Korea, man? Germany. Who's North Korea?
And then Boromir is Germany, and right?
No.
Okay, just cut
no.
that.
No. Oh, that's comedy gold. I am keeping that in there. That is staying for
okay,
the record.
Okay, well, this time, when you edit, I want you to send it to me before it's uploaded.
I guess we'll have to upload late. But okay, back on topic. Continue. So, power, right? Before Jonathan so amazingly interrupted me with that beautiful theory. So power, right? Tolkien grew up in a period when huge amounts of power was possible and given to single men who basically thought they were gods, right? You know? But I think even more than the theme of power, Tolkien discusses what can combat that. What can combat the man with the person who has huge amounts of power, who's become a tyrant, who's become a dictator, right? And the horrors that ensue from that. It's not Aragorn who carries the ring. It's not Boromir. It's not Gandalf. It's not an organization or a collective. It's one...
Well, technically.
Well, yeah, but at its core...
But it's Frodo. It's Frodo.
And it's not just Frodo. It's a weak, you know, tiny, small dude who stands up.
Who has a big heart.
He stands up for what he believes in, and that changes everything. And I think what Tolkien is trying to communicate there is that even if you think you don't have any power, and you might not, even if you think you're useless, that you're not going to be able to make a difference, what Tolkien's saying there is you absolutely can. It's through you. If you don't stand up and do something, you're the person who refuses to take up the ring, and you're the person who's going to allow that evil to continue. It's up to you. So, sure, people will give you support along the way. Sure, there'll be people... Yeah, just people who will give you support, organizations that will give you aid, right? All that stuff. But at the end of the day, it's not a collective. It's not anybody else. It's you who has to be responsible. And I think that's a very powerful theme.
Yeah, I guess... I don't know, I just don't understand what Frodo believes in, though.
Oh yeah, Frodo's a crud character.
Yeah, I was like, when he said, I was like, what he believes in, it's like, what does he believe in, like, not
well,
evil?
To be fair, like, he wants like, to protect we see that in the Fellowship of the Ring. He wants to protect his people in the Shire, and he doesn't want them to become slaves of Sauron. And I think that's also interesting. It's not some lofty ambition, like, save the entire world that's motivating him, right? It's specifically the people in the Shire that he cares about that he wants to protect.
Yeah.
Wow, that was... So, I am sorry for the third time again. Oh, that was so long.
No, I wish I could go on rants like that. I feel so useless now. I don't know anything about this plot. Okay, so did you notice any fantasy tropes? I know I'm just making you talk the whole time, but I feel very ill-versed on the subject. But I don't read a whole lot of fantasy. The only other fantasy I've read, The Hobbit and like Artemis Fowl. But let's not talk about that. Did you notice any tropes that it shares with other fantasy?
Oh, are you kidding me, man? This is the trope maker. This is the trope maker for literally every other fantasy story that came after this. You know, elves, dwarves, goblins, right?
Yeah.
Before Lord of the Rings, they were never used. It is because of Lord of the Rings that those are the only four mythical fantasy races that fantasy authors use.
They weren't using mythology. Goblins weren't using mythology.
They were used maybe occasionally, but like to the extent they are now, like for them to be the standard, you know, like in all the fantasy books and movies and novels, right? That is 100% Tolkien. Everybody wants to rip him off. Even the prologue, right? You know, if you read a fantasy book prologue, anybody out there knows what I'm talking about. You know, long ago, in the ancient land of Underpantsia, Boxer Man, king of the mole people, led his army against the free peoples of Boxerlandia. But a final alliance of shirts and pants came together to stop him.
That's enough.
You know what I mean, though, right? The epic prologue with like tons of backstory. Again, all Tolkien. He has had probably a bigger impact on fantasy than any other author ever.
So, would you say that Tolkien had more of an impact on fantasy than George Lucas did sci-fi?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not super well versed in sci-fi. I've watched Star Trek. I watch, you know, Star Trek and the occasional bit of sci-fi, but I'm really not an expert. But based off of my superficial understanding, I would have to say probably. Okay, that's all.
Okay. So, the music and the visuals, I'd say, is definitely what brings the story to life and what makes it a classic. I think if the music and the visuals were trash, nobody would care about this movie. Do you disagree or agree? That's really how I feel.
I disagree. Don't get me wrong, the music was amazing. Like, it really might be one of the best soundtracks ever made. Visuals, I'll say it. The visuals are amazing. Specifically, I'm referring to the just amazing fight scenes and the crowd scenes with the goblins. Like, those were revolutionary for its time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're important. Don't get me wrong. Yeah, they're amazing. But I don't think they had as huge an impact on the rating as you think they do. Just me personally.
I think that the thematical musical, that's really dumb. I don't know how to say that. The themes in the movie, I think they were like extremely well used. I think that I don't know who composed it, but
you know, Howard Shore.
I think they did an amazing job. I've been learning a lot more about like how themes in movies work and how they kind of evoke different emotions in us. And I just think this did a really amazing job, like making us feel like, you know, hopeful, encouragement for the characters to, you know, get whatever needed to get done, or to just kind of make us, you know, feel bad, I guess, scared for the characters. Wow, I feel extremely illiterate right now. I don't know why. Okay.
We've all been there, man.
Okay. The music was really good. I enjoyed it. Just leave that in. Don't look at anything else. Okay. And the visuals were astounding. Like I said, do watch the behind the scenes if you can. They did so many things with like illusions, especially. That's something that they do there. Like with what's the girl elf's name? What's her name?
Arwen.
Arwen. Yeah, when she's like riding through the forest, they like have her like on a truck and then have one of those like things that you use to hang laundry, and then they're like pulling it towards them, and it has like branches on it to make it look like she's riding, and it's just so fascinating how they make all these effects. Like, and when Gandalf was riding under a bridge to get to the Saruman's tower, that he actually wasn't under a bridge at all. It was like just this little handmade bridge, and they just made it look like it.
This is what
just
they did so before CGI like and
that
green
really
screen.
Show how much. That show just how much the filmmakers really cared about the story they were telling and the epicness of it all, especially with Ty said with the battle scenes. It's just incredible what they were able to accomplish. I definitely think it's a staple of our generation. just as Star Wars was. And I think that's about all I have to say about that. So, any quick thoughts on the overall series? I think that it's definitely memorable, and I can see why so many people love it. I don't think that it quite deserves where it holds up to. Like, you know, I think there's a difference between, like, okay, kind of see it like this. Like, the prequels, I think, and most people think, are really bad. But then when you see
what are you talking about? The prequels are the best movies ever made.
Okay, just be quiet. I said most people, and you're weird. And so what I meant was, okay, maybe you can turn that now. Okay, so when you see the impact that judging something based on its impact, I think is a bit unfair, because it doesn't always reflect the qualities of what it really was. And I think this is one of those situations where it was really good, the prequels weren't, but this was really good, and it had a really big effect, but I don't think it's all hyped up to be. Just my personal opinion. Your thoughts?
We're doing final thoughts now? I thought we were doing quick thoughts.
No, this isn't final thoughts, this is quick thoughts.
Alright, quick thoughts.
Those aren't my final thoughts.
Okay, quick thoughts. Romances in this movie are terrible. Really, really bad. Please, please, never do that again. Let's see here.
The Aragorn love triangle.
Yeah, an 80-year-old love triangle. Hold on. 80-year-old man.
The age differences.
80-year-old man, 5,000-year-old woman, 20-year-old girl.
25, yeah, yep. It's definitely messed up.
Hold on. Let me throw a tip to you guys. Aragorn was taken in by the elves as a child. So Arwen would have been a full-grown adult by the time she would have met Aragorn. So from her perspective, let's just, you know, it's so gross if you think about it. It's so messed up.
I know.
Like,
well, it's okay because it's true love.
FBI, open up! And then Aragorn looks around. What? Yeah, I didn't do anything! Not you, her! And then they point to Arwen and arrest her. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, now that I think about it, that was pretty bad. Oh, let's go over the one person who we haven't talked about yet. Sauron!
Oh, the Thanos everybody's killer. Favorite Dark Lord!
To be honest, I think he was better in the Lego Batman movie than he was here.
Yes.
At least he had a personality then.
You know,
and he made a couple jokes.
It's funny, in the Silmarillion, which is basically like the history book for Lord of the Rings, like it goes through the entire history, Sauron is not actually the big bad. He was the lieutenant of the big bad, who's something like Morgoth or something, I forgot his name. Anyway, Morgoth, that'll be his running name, I don't care. He was actually pretty interesting. He's a bad dude, don't get me wrong. But, like, you can kind of get where he's coming from. He was, like, one of God's angels, pretty much, and he's, like, Lucifer. And he's more like Paradise Lost Lucifer. He's the rebellious, desperately wants to... But the reason why is because he desperately wants to kind of not be subject to anyone, and, you know, I need to read the Cliff's Notes for Paradise Lost, be right back. I haven't read this book in 2 years. Right, yeah, so it's kind of understandable where he's coming from. He doesn't want to be a servant, he doesn't want to be subjugated to anyone. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, he's an awful person. He's arrogant, he's totally just a jerk, right? But you can understand him. In this, Sauron, you can't understand. You don't know why he's doing what he's doing. You don't care why he's doing what he's doing. He's just a placeholder villain, and it's really, really bad.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't very good. At the beginning, though, I kind of, like, for a second, it tricked me into thinking that, like, during like, the beginning sequence when they're, like, talking about how the rings were forged, they said he, like, wanted it so he could control all lands. And for a second there, I thought she was going to say why he was trying to do it, but then she didn't. So, I don't know. Yeah, I think that he's really terrible and... Yeah, actually, you know, just saying that he's, like, really bad is kind of, you know, I don't know what the word is, but why don't we compare him to a good villain? What would you say a good villain is? And to kind of illustrate the difference.
Alright, I would say the villain would be...
Don't say Thanos.
You want me to give an example? You want me to give an example of a good villain?
Just give me an example of a good villain, and we can kind of illustrate the differences and why he's so bad.
Alright, right off the top of my head, let's see here. Loki from Thor.
Loki from Thor.
No. I'm kind of kidding, kind of joking.
Cause I was kind of.
No, Thor is a very. Actually, Thor might be a good example of this. Thor is a very, very simple story, and that's what makes it so easy to analyze. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
So.
Did I freeze?
Yeah, you did. But I think Thor isn't really good, but it is dead simple, and it's so easy to analyze. I think this might actually be... Loki might be a good example here. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
I thought you would respond to that.
No, I didn't have anything to say. I thought you were going to keep talking about
it. Okay, so in the story, Thor is a self-righteous, arrogant, you know, bleh. And his brother is an ice giant, which is really bad in the context of the story. And his brother has always been favored over him. And so right from the start, you have clear motivations for what he wants to do. You have clear motivation. Actually, you know what he wants to do as well, which is to take over the world. You understand why he wants to do it. They sprinkle in a couple of redeeming qualities, such as he's a charismatic, persuasive dude who does seem to feel some kind of sympathy and love for his brother, even though it's incredibly twisted. And while obviously the execution could have used some work, I think it's a good example of what at least a decent villain should be. Somewhat sympathetic, and definitely understand. Somewhat sympathetic, definitely empathetic. You may not be able to agree with what they're doing, but you can understand them. You can look at them and say, you know what, I get why you're doing what you're doing. Because anything less
than... So, Sauron didn't...
Hmm?
Yeah, oh, can I... Yeah, could you just illustrate the differences?
You go ahead.
Sorry, I interrupted you there. I thought you were going to be done.
No, I already forgot. Sorry, I forgot what I was saying now. Okay. I forgot what I was saying.
Okay, sorry. Okay, so to kind of contrast Sauron, he doesn't have really anything going for him. He doesn't have any qualities that should make the audience feel anything towards him. He doesn't feel anything towards anybody. Not even his like right-hand man, which could have been something, I guess, with him and Saruman. There's absolutely no reason for him to do anything that he does, except to want to take over the world. Super arbitrary. Arbitrary, why do I keep saying that? And yeah, I guess that's it.
Yeah, he's a pretty bad villain. He's a bad villain. Oh, yeah.
he's a bad person.
And that's what makes him okay. So good.
So
bad, it's good.
He's bad to the bone.
Ah, no.
Okay, so, any final opinions and summaries? I think that, I guess I already said this. It's good, but overhyped. Just a couple words, sentence, to describe this trilogy.
Okay. I guess on my end, I would say, shouldn't we go, like, you know, like, more poetic? Like, you know, this movie's, they've been really a journey, bro. Like, you know, I feel like I've seen into my inner soul through this movie. I understand the meaning of Nirvana now, bruh. You know, like something like that. Instead, you just go with, yeah, you know, it's good. Overhyped. The end. You know?
You know, the emotional intensity. I was crying the whole time. The tears flowing down are 100% genuine. It was just a roller coaster of emotions in every direction. I mean, when Boromir, I mean, his brother, it's just so, I can't put it into words how this movie has affected me in the soul.
Okay, I take it back. Never mind. Just say what you were saying before. All right, my turn.
I know.
So, growing up, I really, really loved these movies. And I don't know why, looking back on it now, I still love these movies. But taking it from a purely critical perspective, I would have to say it absolutely is hugely influential. It is a cultural landmark, and no, it's a landmark for fiction as well, in general. It's a huge achievement. But in spite of that, it fails on such a fundamental level when it comes to characterization, which is arguably the most important part of fiction, that it does not deserve the hype and love that it has received over the years, and it does not deserve the lasting cultural, like, awareness that it has. Unlike the prequel series, which absolutely deserves it. Like, the prequel series, okay, like, okay, just we get it, mind-blowing
no,
in there.
No. Yeah, okay. Okay, so what would you rate this trilogy? What would you give it? And then I'll give my answer.
In any other movie with good plot, good world building, but bad characterization, I would probably give it a 7. Maybe a 6. Probably a 6. But because this is so exceptional in what it does, even if it fails at characterization completely and utterly, I would have to say the trilogy as a whole, 8 out of 10. Must watch, not really as great as people make it out to be, but an absolute must watch for anybody who's interested in the history of fantasy, fantasy books, fantasy movies, and they're curious about that stuff. So
I'm gonna say 8 as well. Actually, the first time I was going to say 6.5.
Whoa!
Before I started watching the whole, before I just we rewatched these recently, and so we'd have a better grip on the story. Before I was gonna say like 6.5 or 7 if I was feeling generous, but having seen all these movies like together and kind of like seeing the effect they had on me, because I did find myself, this is kind of like, it ages like, I don't know, it just ages well. I feel like the more you watch it, the more, it's not like one of those movies where you see the holes in it more and more. It's kind of something that, it's kind of a film that you kind of grow to appreciate a little bit more every time you watch it. At least for me, that's how I felt on my second viewing. So I think, I guess I'll give it an 8 also. I would usually say 7.5, but because of the filmmaking, I would give it an 8.
So in spite of our overwhelming criticisms, we still gave it an 8 out of 10.
Yes, a cultural phenomenon, but is it deserved? No, sir. Thank you for watching.
Crud story.
Thank you all so much for listening. We really appreciate all our listeners. Please be sure to leave a 5-star review if you enjoy our content. And if you want to help spread the word, tell your friends. And you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and wherever you listen to your favorite music or podcast. Thanks so much for listening, and have a great day. Why did I say have a great day? That is so stupid. Oh. Can you do it, please? Can you do it?
Hola, amigos. Thank you for listening to the podcast. I am yours.
I just feel so
funny. I am Titus West, senor. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Breaker, and wherever you get your podcasts from. We appreciate all our listeners. If you enjoyed it, tell your friends about us. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Just a second.
I don't know what I was doing.
I'm listening to a previous episode. I'm just going to the end right now, and I'm gonna listen to what I said this season. Dude, did you cut anything out of The Greatest Showman?
Yes.
No, you just uploaded it, didn't you? You just combined it and uploaded.
No, I actually did. I cut some things.
Okay, can you please take it down and redo it?
Wait,
do it right.
Seriously, what's so bad?
I only listened to 20 seconds.
Huh?
I mean, there's two times of me messing up the intro at the end. That's what the big deal is. They're not supposed to hear that. Okay, please take it down. Okay, please take it down and do it.
I don't
and then
think
send
I can. I don't think
it.
I can.
Okay. Well, okay. Well, we need to go back to the. You have to send me. You've done this to yourself, Ty. But every time that you finish editing, you have to send it to me first. Okay. Cool. What's up, guys? Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for listening to our podcast. We really appreciate all our listeners. And if you enjoy our content, be sure to leave a 5-star review down below. It'd be greatly appreciated. Be sure to tell your friends about it. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. I was going to say anywhere where books are sold, but that would make no sense. Again, thank you all for listening, and we'll see you on the next one. Bye.
Good job, amigo.